This week, Parshas Achrimos is a double Parsha. It's Achrimos Kedoshim. And that, of course, lends itself to a number of different possibilities of where we can go with respect to this Parsha. But I want to begin kind of with a topic which we were looking at a few weeks ago, and that is the death of the sons of Aaron. And the reason I want to go this route is because, I mean, it is always such a compelling story. And while we did explore trying to make sense of their deaths and some of the reasons which are suggested as to why they died, I do want to look at things from a slightly different perspective. One of which came to my attention in preparation for the Haftorah class that I gave this past Shabbos, or in advance of this past Shabbos, over the Haftorah of Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. I think that's what it was, because one of the points which came out is that when it comes to memory and the significance of Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh, so there was a one of the points which was made, I'm trying to remember what it was, had something to do with how for in the longer term scheme of things, when we imagine what Rosh Chodesh is and what Shabbos is, Rosh Chodesh is something which is given to us, right? Achodesh es Elchem, and Shabbos is something which is Shabbos Hil Hashem, right? Shabbos is more for God, and the way in which we observe these days, you know, is reflective of different times. But the main thing which was one of the main things that was emphasized was that Rosh Chodesh, which was originally supposed to be a tribe, a holiday rather for each tribe. There are 12 Rosh Chodeshim, 12 tribes in the year. There are 12 months in the year. Therefore, 12 Rosh Chodeshim. Was each supposed to be designated with a particular Rosh Chodesh, but that was taken away on account of the sin of the golden calf. So instead, it became something which was a highlight of the Nashim Tzid Kaniyos. So maybe not that I'm thinking about it, it may have been from the previous Haftorah on Parsha Shmini, where we had this thought about the memorializing of Aaron's sons, which became a memorializing forever. And in which way are they memorialized on Yom Kippur? So maybe I'm just mixing up Haftorah classes that I gave, and for which case I apologize. But it was that point that I wanted to emphasize, which is that Aaron's sons are memorialized in Yom Kippur. And of course, this morning, when I was reading the Torah reading for this morning, so I don't usually lane during the course of the year all that much in shul. But I've been reading the Torah from the Siddur in our Zoom davening. And so I read this Achrimos, but in the way that the tune or the melody of this reading really resonates in my memory is with the Yom Kippur melody of Torah reading, because this is the Yom Kippur Torah reading. Daber Hashem acharei Moshenei b'nei Aaron mikorav asam l'bnei Hashem v'yamusu. So I didn't read it that way. I read it the way we normally read Torah during the week. But it struck me as bringing to, at least to my mind, the image of Yom Kippur, simply because of how the topic that is raised in the opening chapter of Parshas Achrimos, which is of course the Torah reading for Yom Kippur, and it's not just that it's the Torah reading for Yom Kippur, but it literally describes the avoda, the service of Yom Kippur. So we have to just think about that, put that in context for a moment. I'd like to take narrative from the Torah. You know, this is not really narrative. There are only, in my estimation, there are really only two narratives in the book of Vayikra. One is the deaths of the sons of Aaron, of Nadav and Avihu, the deaths of Nadav and Avihu, and the aftermath of that story, insofar as Elazar and Itamar, and of course Aaron, having to pick up the pieces and continue to do the avoda, continue to do the service, even with the deaths looming, right? And it was another one of you hadn't even been buried yet, and Aaron and Elazar and Itamar to pick up the pieces and do the avoda of the dedication of the Mishkan. I mean, it's even bigger than that. I think I spoke a little bit about when we did Parsha Shmini a couple weeks ago. I think I spoke a little bit about but it was already. Before Pesach, no, it was the Shabbos immediately after Pesach. So anyway, so I mentioned at the time that there's also the thought process surrounding what was Elisheva's experience. Elisheva being the mother of Nadav and Abihu and Elazar and Itamar, Aaron's wife. And how there's a Gemara in several places in the Yerushalmi, which talk about, and Midrash for sure in many places, which talk about how Elisheva, in addition to having one thing to mourn, she had five things to celebrate. Okay, and the five things that she celebrated, we reviewed at that time. I'm not going to recount it again. But the point is that everybody felt this particular loss. But when did that take place? It took place, and the reason why I mention it is because Elisheva's brother was Nachshon ben Aminadav, and Nachshon, because she was Elisheva Abbas Aminadav, by the way. So Nachshon was the Nasi. He was the first Nasi, first prince to bring the offerings that were brought in the Chanukah HaMizbech, as we read about in Parshas Naso. Karbana Karas Kesef Achash Shloshim Hayah Mishkalah. So that is the first one to bring was Nachshon Bin Aminadav. And so Elisheva was celebrating, you know, the position that her husband had, that her children had, that her grandson had, that her brother-in-law had, that her brother had. Okay, those were her celebrations. And the negative, of course, very negative, was the deaths of her sons. So when did that take place? So we know when the dedication of the Mishkan took place. We're told at the end of Parshas Pekudei that it was the beginning of Nisan. We're told in Parshas Naso that Nachshon is bringing his carbon at the beginning of the month of Nisan. The dedication of the Mishkan is taking place at the beginning of the month of Nisan. So we know where that is. It's just a couple weeks before Pesach. When is the depiction of our Parsha, the beginning of our Parsha Bachrei Mos, given to us? Well, I don't know when it's given to us, but we're told about the Yom Kippur service. So when is the Yom Kippur service with respect to the deaths of Nadav and Abihu? It's 6 months later, right? We know. How far apart is Nisan from Tishrei? Okay, 6 months apart. And so therefore, we're talking about something which was going to be relatively fresh in the eyes and in the mind, certainly in the hearts of Aaron when he comes. And what's he first told? Okay, Hashem tells Moshe, after the deaths of the sons of Aaron, when they came close to before God and they died. Hashem says to Moshe, "Daber al Aaron achicha, speak to Aaron your brother, ve'al yavo b'chol eis el hakodesh b'beis laparoches, and he should not come at any time b'chol eis to the Holy of Holies on the other side of the curtain. Al paneiak aporos asher l'Aaron v'lo yamus." He should not come before the Kapor. The Kapor is the cover of the Ark, which is on top of the Ark, and he should not die, because with the cloud is how I'm going to appear on the Kapor. Bezos yavo Aaron el HaKodesh, with the following, Aaron should come into the Holy of Holies. And then it goes on to describe the Yom Kippur service, that Aaron needs to have a bull that he has done vidui on, a confession on, and he needs to have done a confession on a goat, and the blood of each of these things makes their way. Actually, it actually doesn't do confession on the goat that gets sacrificed, but so I kind of misspoke for a second. But anyway, but he brings the blood of both the bull and the goat, and he's going to do whatever ritual he's going to do. But I mean, just that language is really, if you think in the mindset of Moshe and Aaron and what they were experiencing and what they had experienced, so, you know, you wonder, Daber al Aaron achicha. Hashem says to Moshe, speak to Aaron your brother, ve'al yavo b'chol eis el hakodesh v'beis laparoches. Is that the exact language that Hashem, that Moshe, like, in other words, it doesn't say Daber al Aaron lemor. Is Hashem giving Moshe a quote of exactly what he's supposed to say? Is there a script? Or is Moshe being told to kind of, you know, convey to Aaron, Al yavo b'chol eis el hakodesh, that he shouldn't go in at any time? There's a time and place. Now, far be it from me to suggest that God is looking to pour salt into Aaron's wounds. I think that you know, is not a fair assessment. But the way that it's conveyed, at least to Moshe, is something which would be pretty chilling, because for now Aaron, he's got to consider, oh, so I'm not supposed to go in at any time. You know, that would have been nice to have known before we started all this, that maybe you could have let us know that the Holy of Holies doesn't have an open door policy where a Kohen or a Kohen Gadol, you know, can go in at any time and do a service before God. And how does Aaron, and how would Aaron respond to something like that? Right? So, you know, Moshe is, all this that's told us at the beginning of Parshas Achrimos is Bezos Yavo Aaron al Kodesh, Befar of Makar, etc. So now, at what point in time does Moshe convey all this information? Right? In other words, God is talking all of this in Parshas Achrimos. And, you know, I'm just trying to see exactly where the instruction ends and, you know, and where Moshe starts talking to Aaron. Okay? I mean, I can't find it. The only thing that I can say is at the very end of the chapter, what we have is Vayisazos lachem l'chukas olam l'chaper al b'nei Yisrael mikocha ha'tosah machas v'shana v'yaz kasher tzivah Hashem es Moshe. That's all we have. That Aaron did all that Hashem had commanded Moshe. Okay? So where does that put us? So I cannot imagine being in any of these people's shoes, in Moshe's shoes, in Aaron's shoes, in this time period. You know, I'm not talking about from a religious perspective. I'm talking about on the personal level perspective. Meaning, because Aaron, as we know, was a human being, right? The response which Aaron had to the deaths of his sons was Vayidom Aaron. Vayidom Aaron, that he was quiet. Now, what that means, there are many ways to interpret Aaron's quiet. It could be an acceptance of the divine retribution, however you want to view whatever happened to another one of you. It could be an acceptance of that. It could be, you know what, I got nothing to say. It could be, maybe there was even a hint of anger at Moshe. You know, Moshe turns to Aaron after it happens and says, you know, oh, this is what Hashem said, but Krovaya Kadesh, I'm going to be sanctified with those closest to me. And Aaron's, you know, perhaps wondering, you know, Moshe, that would have been nice to tell me, so at least I could prepare. Those are possibilities. But, you know, typically when we look at Aaron's experience and we say, Vayidom Aaron, we say, sometimes there are just no words. Sometimes there are just no words. So that, in a certain sense, is what Aaron is carrying now and we don't know when this instruction was given, right? It says it's Acharei Mos. So Acharei Mos means after the deaths. So maybe this instruction of Yom Kippur was given shortly afterwards, while the wound was still very fresh, and when the lessons were still able to be learned, especially with respect to looking at what Nadav and Avihu had done wrong, you know, assuming that they did some things wrong. I mean, the Torah certainly says that they brought a strange fire, Asher Lo Tzivosam, that they had not been commanded, or that Hashem had not commanded them to do. So that's an important lesson, that you don't want to do things which are not commanded, right? You don't want to go above me on Lo Sosifu, Ala Davar Asher Anochim Tzaveschem, Lo Sigrumi Men, right? You don't want to add, you also don't want to subtract. And so the challenge then becomes, in Moshe's giving over this instruction, you know, how many times does Aaron hold his tongue again and say, oh, you know, it would have been really helpful, considering the amount of time that took place from when you came down from Har Sinai to when we established the Mishkan and all that, for us to have gone over all of the rules. And when I say all the rules, I mean all of the rules. Right, we could have learned about a Kohen, right? I mean, you go back to Parshas Shemini and look at some of the things which are told at that time in terms of what they're told after the deaths of Nadav and Avihu. Yayin b'shechar al teish, right? Don't drink any alcohol, right? And rules about cutting their hair, and rules about karbanos and eating the karbanos. Hold on, you know, how do you get, you know, I mean, sometimes people start something and there are things which they don't anticipate. In terms of, we didn't realize we would have to have so much, you know, I mean, maybe somebody opens up a restaurant, right? And they didn't realize that they needed to have so many napkins and so many disposable plates, whatever. I'm not talking about a fancy restaurant where they have dishes and everything. So, you know, all the paper goods supply. And they forgot that, oh my goodness, you know, we have to have a bathroom in the back where people, you know, so we need to supply that also. And all the paper towels and all the salt and the little ketchup packets. And who knows to get all these things until you're in the throes of it. And then you're figuring things out as you go along. But this is the Mishkan. The only reason why we know what to do in the Mishkan is because God, who gave the instruction for the Mishkan, tells you how to operate the Mishkan. So wouldn't it have been proper for us to have gone through all of the instructions and for us to know everything that we need to know before we get into the establishment. Now, of course, we're going to learn on the job. You know, there's nothing like doing a karbon when you've never done it before versus when you've done a few and, you know, maybe you messed up a couple times and Moshe's watching over you and he says, oh, you know, that's not the way the instruction was given. Fine. But insofar as the do's and don'ts, you know, you're a Kohen, you can't be drunk, you're a Kohen, you have to wear these garments, you're a Kohen, you have to this, you're a Kohen, this and this. And don't go to places where you're not supposed to go. I mean, anything which has on it a death punishment or a death repercussion, let's remove punishment for a moment, a death repercussion if you mess it up, such as going into the Holy of Holies, such as burning ketores, such as using a strange fire in a strange place, such as, you know, a czar and non-Kohen can't bring certain sacrifices. I mean, these are the kinds of things which you would want to emphasize beforehand. So what I'm troubled by is the question of what is Aaron feeling when he hears all of this stuff. Moshe is giving instruction for Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, as we know, is the holiest day in the Jewish calendar. It's the day of Kippur, or it's the day of Kippurim. It's the day of atonement, which is brought. And who is the instrument and the vehicle through which atonement comes about? One man. The man is the Kohen Gadol. In this case, Aaron HaKohen. And what does he need to carry on his heart? I mean, how many times does the Torah say, when it comes to the garments which Aaron wears, that he is carrying it al libo, on his heart, or benasa al ksefav, on his shoulders? I mean, just think about those images and the way that we use those phrases as metaphors. When we talk about somebody carrying a burden on their heart or a burden on their shoulders, they're weighed down. And when we say weighed down, we don't necessarily mean by an actual, you know, backpack or an actual load of 100 pounds or whatever it may be. But it's a burden of emotions, and it's a burden of raw pain in some cases. You know, in the Shabbos HaGadol drasha, I shared a story from a Yom Kippur in 1942, Kol Nitre, that Rabbi Yisachar Shlomo Tachtel Hashem Yikom Demo was killed 2 years later when Hungarian Jewry was collected and shipped off and murdered over the span of just a couple of months. In the summer of 44, so this was Yom Kippur, 1942. So he tells a story about how he was in a Yom Kippur event. He was in a Yom Kippur event in one of the few shuls that were still open in Hungary at that time. And the rabbi, who was the rabbi of the shul, he describes as being a big tzaddik, and he was hunched over. Now, I don't know if the rabbi was normally hunched over, but Rabbi Teichtel says that the rabbi was normally hunched over, but he was even more hunched over than he normally was, because of the burdens of that time period, of that generation. Okay, so just imagine that burden. He wasn't carrying anything, but he was carrying the weight of all that pressure on his back, and in that case, that rabbi was significantly hunched over. So you can only imagine what Aaron's carrying on himself at this time. He's carrying the pain of the loss of his sons. He's carrying all that has happened in his own family since that time. Okay, and again, we don't know when this instruction came, but we do know when Yom Kippur is. Okay, and of course, if you think about what Yom Kippur is in terms of the scheme of history, so the first Yom Kippur that we have, that we know of in terms of just what took place, and we have a timeline, and that's how we have an idea of this, aside from the fact that the Gemara talks about it, is that the first Yom Kippur is when Moshe came down the mountain with the second set of luchos, the second set of tablets. So what that means is that if you just follow more or less a timeline, you have the Exodus. Okay, the Exodus takes place on the 15th of Nisan. Eventually, you know, and then the events post Exodus, pre Revelation at Sinai. So you have the splitting of the sea. You have the war with Amalek. You have the incident in Rephidim. That's also Amalek, but that's when Moshe hits the rock for the first time, and that's all good, you know, except that the people are complaining, and Moshe's not pleased with the complaining. You have the incident in Marah after the splitting of the sea, when people are complaining about water as well, or the water is bitter. So you have all of that. Then you have Sinai, okay, and after the 40 days of Sinai starts more or less at the beginning of the month of Sivan. So our tradition is that 40 days later, Moshe comes down with the first luchos, first set of tablets, and it's the 17th of Tammuz, And what does he do? He breaks the tablets. Why? Because when he gets down to the bottom of the mountain, what does he see? The golden calf. So Moshe beseeches God, and he goes up a couple more times for 40-day periods, and the second of those new 40-day periods ends on Yom Kippur with Moshe coming down. So that's the third, you know, time that Moshe's on the mountain for 40 days, comes down with the two new luchos, and that day is Yom Kippur. Okay? Now, so what does that mean? Now, after that Yom Kippur, and the timeline in terms of the instruction for the Mishkan and when the people start gathering stuff, that's not so clear. We do have an idea towards the end of the Book of Shemos, when the people are gathering the stuff, when they're putting things together, and of course when the Mishkan is assembled, and that takes place almost a year after they got out of Egypt. As I mentioned before, it's the beginning of the month of Nisan, which is almost a year after they left Egypt. Okay, so, and that's when Nadav and Abihu died, which is the opening of our Parsha with respect to that. So, now, what does that mean for us? When we think about Yom Kippur, the first Yom Kippur, you know, what did that look like? Obviously, there was no Mishkan. Obviously, this instruction hadn't been given yet. Maybe it had been given to Moshe, but Moshe had not conveyed it yet. When would he have had a chance to do so? He wouldn't have had. And so he's coming down on, you know, what to us now is the holiest day, and maybe this is a reason why it became Yom Kippur, because God, you know, anticipated that this was all going to happen, and so the day of real atonement is when the new set of luchos and the new agreement and God's new midos, God's new character traits, have come into play. And so now, here we go. It's the new Am Yisrael. Very nice. So Moshe comes down. But the Moshe coming down with the second set of luchos, it's not the same Moshe that came down to break the first luchos. Okay, because there was now a very deep and dark stain on the history. A lot of people had died after the episode of the golden calf. And Moshe beseeching God, I mean, he's closer to God than he's ever been before and than he ever could have imagined. I mean, can you imagine after having 40 days of chavrusa with God and learning the Torah, you go up and you just lay everything bare before the Almighty and you get, I mean, just try to wrap your finger around this. You kind of get God to change his midos, to change his qualities, to change, to become more patient. Now, there are those who will certainly argue, oh, no, Moshe didn't get God to change. God, you know, adjusted. Well, what does that even mean? I don't know. But think about where Moshe stands in terms of his, you know, Moshe, after the revelation, comes down from Har Sinai, he's glowing. Think Charlton Heston coming down from the mountain. Right? He's glowing, and he's up here. Okay? And you think like, wow, you can't get higher than that. And then he goes up for the second time, and the third time, and he's not here. He's, can't even see him, right? He's like, whoa! In a way that we can't even imagine. Okay? That how could you get any higher than where you had been before? But that's what it is. And so now, we're in that time period between Yom Kippur between that Yom Kippur and the deaths of Nadav and Abihu, the Mishkan was built, and now we're past the deaths of Nadav and Abihu, looking forward to that next Yom Kippur. And, you know, I can only imagine what the people are thinking. You know, we have some really challenging anniversaries, which they have, right? They're going to come, right? I mean, after the dedication of the Mishkan, they have Pesach, and we know they have Pesach because we're going to see it in the Torah, the story of Pesach Sheni, right? People who missed out, and there's a debate as to who these people are, who are unable to bring the Karban Pesach at the time. Were they people who were carrying the bones of Yosef? Were they the people who dealt with Nadav and Abihu, taking Nadav and Abihu out of the Mishkan, or were they others for whatever reason? So we know that there's the next Pesach, and then shortly after the next Pesach, a few weeks later, you count Sfiras Omer, right? What do you do? Then you have Shavuos. And what's Shavuos? Well, it's more or less the anniversary of the giving of the Torah. So that's one time. And then 40 days later, they're like, hey guys, remember what we did last year on this date? You know, let's be very careful. Let's not do that again. And then 83 days after that, 83 days after Shivas or Tammuz, the 17th of Tammuz, comes Yom Kippur. And what's Yom Kippur? This is the day when we got the second set of luchos. And now, look what Aaron's doing. But remember what happened in the interim. Remember Aaron's role at the previous anniversary that we didn't really want to deal with, which was the anniversary of the golden calf. And now, look what Aaron's doing. Okay, and what has happened in his own life since that time? And how does all that impact what's going on in his insides, and what burden he's carrying on his heart and on his shoulders, as is described, not just in terms of the actual physical garments which he's wearing, but everything else which he has to do. He's carrying the sin of the Bnei Israel on him, and he's seeking atonement for everybody. Now, had the people been forgiven? Go back to Parshas Ki Sisa. You can make an argument that God said, "All right, you know, we're going to move on," and they did move on. Okay, fair enough. But don't think for a second that the golden calf isn't always hanging in the background. It is, and we know this is true because of the rules surrounding what the Kohen Gadol wears when he goes into the Holy of Holies. That he has garments which are laden with gold, but he's not allowed to wear them when he goes in. Okay, and that, I think, is why it's so significant and so important that when we look at this parsha in at least in the first chapter of it, we think about, you know, what's the name of the parsha? I don't put a whole lot of stock in the name of parshas. Usually parshas are named for, unless there's like an introduction, such as there is in this one, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe, Hashem spoke to Moshe. So those words are usually not part of the name of the parsha, but once you get past that introduction, then it's one of the first three words that follow, which are usually the name or the double name of the parsha. So in this case, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe, Acharemos Shnei Bnei Aharon. Okay, Acharemos. Acharemos means after the deaths. So I think that there's a lot of significance because it's important to look at what does it mean to look back at a traumatic episode such as that one and say, okay, now we have to consider what life is going to look like afterwards and for the future. Okay, I mean, there are a lot of vorts about what the parshas, this parsha, this week's the double parshas I mentioned at the outset, Acharemos Kedoshim, and if you say the next week's parsha, which is Acharemos Kedoshim and more, and you just put those words together, which they're not together, of course, in the Torah, they're parshas apart, but Acharemos Kedoshim and more means after the deaths of the holy ones, and more speak. And that's a real 180 from what Aaron's response was to the deaths of Nadav and Abihu. Right? After Nadav and Abihu died, Aaron's response was, Vayidom Aaron. Aaron was silent. But that image of Acharemos Kedoshim and more, after the deaths of the of the righteous or of the holy ones, you have to speak, is again, it's homiletical, of course, it is homiletical, but it is significant in the sense that this is the way the Jewish people have always viewed ourselves. Yes, we learn from Aaron and we say, look, sometimes there's nothing to say. But there is also the viewpoint that says, well, after a traumatic and tragic event, what lessons can we take? What lessons can we walk away with? And in this particular case, what does Aaron do? Right? We saw what Aaron's response was in the immediate moment. But what does Aaron do later? Aaron finds a new purpose in life. Aaron finds that he can bear the brunt of the sins of Bnei Israel on his heart and on his shoulders, and he can become a legend in a way that, who knows what Aaron's experience would have been like? We can't. There's no way to know. Everybody's dealt a different deck of cards of life. And the question then becomes, for each person, how do you deal with the decks, with the hand that you're dealt? Right? We in the shul, maybe it was an error in judgment, but it was a one-man show that Billy Crystal put on, 700 Sundays. And it was about a reflection on the life that he had with his father who died when he was very young. And, you know, he said, and the last part of the film is very reflective, and it's exactly this point where he said, you know, look, I could get angry at God over so many things that happen with my father and this and this and this and this. And he mentions a whole bunch of stuff which was bad. And then he looks at all the things which are good in his life and said, you know what? All told, yeah, I got one or two bad hands, but all told, I got a pretty good hand. And I should be happy with what I have, and I found the way to make, as we all like to say, lemonade out of lemons. And so I think that an important message of the Parsha Achrei Mos is to look at the way Aaron rises to the occasion after the fact. I mean, think about the fact that the first thing that we hear on Yom Kippur is Achrei Mos Shnei Bnei Aaron. Basically means that Nadav and Avihu have been immortalized into our Yom Kippur service, which goes to show that, well, it's not clear if they were actually sinning or if what Moshe said is entirely correct, that it's Krovaya Kadesh, that God was sanctified with those most holy to him, those closest to him. And therefore, what does that say about us? It means that no matter how we live our lives, right, what does it say here? Bikarvasam lifnei Hashem vayamusu, that they were getting as close to God as possible. Bikarvasam, right? They approached before God, and that's when they died. So I think that there are a lot of lessons that can be taken just from that line alone. Not that you were trying to get close to God. When you die, you're trying to get close to God, you can become an immortal. When your father can rise to the challenge and can become a legend of Bnei Yisrael because of the way he memorializes your loss, well, what else? What better way can you be remembered amongst the children of Israel? And just to remember that Nadav and Avihu, in the scheme of things, the Chazal could say whatever they want about Nadav and Avihu. They were sinning, they were punished, whatever. The Torah gives us enough testimony to say that Nadav and Avihu were the holiest of the holy. And that whatever it is that they did, remember that when we consider Yom Kippur and the experience that we all are hoping for at that time, the first image which we have is Nadav and Avihu, and then we have Aaron. And if you think for one second that the entire time that Aaron is doing his service, he's not thinking about his sons, I got news for you. Of course he's thinking only about his sons. Okay, we have a rule when it comes to Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur davening, that a person who, that the ideal person has to be a certain age, has to be married. Okay, why married? Now, if you can't find somebody who fits those criteria, you can get somebody who has a nice voice and who's a good person and all that stuff, that's fine. Okay, that's b'di'evit. The chachila, in the first place, you want somebody who's married. Why? Because that person doesn't only think about himself. He thinks about, or he's davening for, his spouse. And if he has children, nachbasser, he's davening for his children and worried for them. And think about Aaron. Right? You think Aaron's worried about Nadav and Avihu? How can you be worried about Nadav and Avihu? There's nothing to worry about them anymore. They're gone. But Aaron is carrying the holiness, the closeness to God of Nadav and Avihu. And he says, the way that I have to carry myself and the way that I have to defend and protect the Bnei Yisrael is I have to carry with me what Nadav and Avihu lived for and what Nadav and Avihu died for. That's what Achrei Mos is all about. And that's what Yom Kippur is all about. And that's what every single person needs to remember. When we are looking for atonement, we have to carry the burden of those who came before us. If we've lost loved ones on whatever occasion, whether it was, you know, in the correct order of life, right? Those above us, sometimes they died very young, or whether we've lo aleinu buried children or a spouse or siblings, whatever it may be, that we are living lives for them. Okay, one of the most beautiful lessons, and I'll leave you with this, that somebody in our shul told me, she lost her sister when her sister was very young. Her sister, I think, was 8 years old when she died. Okay, so this woman's now in her 60s. So she's celebrating this year. I think she celebrated something close to the 60th year outside of her sister. Okay, and she told me that what she does is, because her sister did not have the opportunity to do, you know, many things as a child in her life, she has taken it upon herself to support activities that for children, that children should be able to go to the museum, go to the theater, learn Torah, whatever it may be. And that's the way she perpetuates the legacy. So each person has to find their own way to do that, to do the things that the deceased was unable to do, but also to consider what would the deceased have done and how would the deceased, you know, what kind of life do we imagine for them? And that's what Yom Kippur in a certain sense, is all about. It's one of the reasons why Yom Kippur was the first holiday to get a Yizkor into it. And it's also one of the important ways that we just need to use Yom Kippur as a perpetuating day for how the rest of the year translates itself. So I'm concluding here. I don't want to disregard, of course, the rest of the parsha, which has in it the arayos, right, the forbidden relationships, which is read in the afternoon of Yom Kippur, and of course the many mitzvos which appear in Parshas Kedoshim, many of which are bein adam lachavero and bein adam lamakom, between man and man and between man and one's fellow God, between man and God. Most of which, by the way, they're more about between man and man, although many of them get a stamp of approval where God says, "Do this, ani Hashem, I am Hashem," which is an interesting question as to what that means. Why is God giving his stamp on a number of these psukim saying, "I am Hashem"? But it just goes to show the importance of relating to people. And Aaron learned this lesson in the most significant way. Aaron is a legend, not just because of the way he carried on after the deaths of Nadav and Abihu, but the way in which he just carried himself and sacrificed himself, similar to the way Moshe did on a number of occasions, but to defend the Bnei Israel. And so I can't imagine that Aaron wasn't thinking every step of the way, "I'm doing this for my sons," because Nadav should have been the next Kohen Gadol, and if not Nadav, then Abihu should have been the next Kohen Gadol, and neither of them got to do that, so I have to live vicariously for them. And that is the lesson that Aaron teaches us, that's the lesson that Yom Kippur teaches us, and that is an important lesson that we should also consider in this time, right? We're in a very strange time. It's a different time of tragedy, okay? I mean, we all probably know people who have passed away during this time period, and the question then becomes, when it's all over, and hopefully it should be all over soon, what legacy do we carry of the people who are no longer able to do their what they were supposed to do? What can we do in their name and in their sake? Because that is what Aaron taught us through the way that he conducted himself on Yom Kippur, carrying the legacy of Nadav and Abihu, and standing in whichever way that he can to defend Bnei Yisrael and to stand for them, and in their appointmentship, whatever that means, that Aaron said, "This is my job, and I'm going to rise to the occasion, and I'm going to do my best in order to fill out my mission in life." And the mission that he took over after his son's death was to live for them and to carry their name.